Second down.
Well, we don't believe you. You need more people.
Second down, let's talk about the press conference. The Advocate Center was the place to be yesterday at 2 p.m. in Chicago as Gar Forman and John Paxson took to the podium and the microphones to explain why they fired Tom Thibodeau. According to reports, he was escorted to his office by security. They watched him pack up his things, and then he was escorted out the building. That right there sounded insane.
Excuse
when I read
me.
That. Absolutely. I'm like, wow,
is
it really that bad?
Absolutely. Yeah, come on.
And you said it was that bad here. Because it between him and Pax.
Yeah, I mean, listen.
You mean like come to blows bad?
Listen, the real issue here is John Paxson and Tom Thibodeau. I think Gar Forman is kind of caught up in the middle of it somewhat, but the clash was those two guys. And I really and truly felt like, hey, that was necessary because it really could have went down.
Self-preservation,
yeah,
huh?
No question. It could have really went down because, I mean, those two guys, there's no question. They didn't like each other at all. Like, it was no secret. Everybody knew it.
From the battles, from Paxson hovering over practices.
Did not like
differences
that.
Differences in draft picks. I think it was reported late last night that there was a
Draymond
big issue
Green.
When they wanted Draymond Green amongst the coaches, and they took Marcus Teague. We see how that turned out. So, I mean you have issues like that.
I mean, in hindsight, you could look at it because Derrick was out. You needed a backup point guard. But even Derrick Rose said, yo, the kid can't play. Don't draft him. He said that. Don't take
and
him.
And he knows him because he played with his brother.
And he played, he played for Cal. You know what I'm saying? So he knew that. And they took him anyway. And it was a disaster.
Yeah. And I remember Draymond Green having a pretty good NCAA tournament.
Absolutely.
I don't remember the stats, but I was like, oh, he's going to be something.
Yeah.
And then when he leaned out, he just got so much more athletic. He was guarding somebody the other night.
He was guarding Harden along with Harrison Barnes.
Yeah, Harden. Yeah. He was. And Harden had 11 turnovers.
Yeah.
That made me smile.
Yeah. 13 turnovers. I mean, and Draymond Green is a really good player. I mean,
he's the Army Swiss knife of the NBA.
He went six picks after a guy who's no longer in the NBA.
Absolutely. So let's talk about the press conference. What stood out from the press conference?
I thought it was very disingenuous. Really and truly. And honestly, I thought it was a waste of time. You know, it was, to me, you know, just listening to it, it was really just a discussion of all the narratives that we heard all year. You know, minutes limits and, you know, beef between the front office. And John Paxson said something that I just really just had to laugh at. He said that the players never saw or heard any sort of discord inside the organization.
I find that
everything,
very hard to believe.
Everything they heard came from the media. And I'm like,
I kind of
tuned out at that point. Yeah. It was like, yo, like, I know you lying. Like, I know for a fact you're not telling the truth. But, I mean, obviously, you got to save face. You know, you the public face of a billion-dollar corporation. So, obviously, you know everybody's going to be writing about this stuff and listen to it. So, you got to say the quote-unquote right things. But I just thought that was probably the most disingenuous thing I probably heard the entire afternoon.
Speaking to the players, they were very quick to say they didn't make the decision until after the exit interviews with the players, almost placing some of the responsibility or some of the reasoning for why they fired Tom Thibodeau on what was said in those exit interviews. Found that interesting as well. It sounds like they're trying to make it sound like, well, the players really didn't want him here anymore. So that was another reason why we decided.
Sound like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I've gotten let go of jobs before for, you know, reasons they said right to my face, and then publicly it was something else.
Totally different, yeah.
You know, so like you said, it is kind of about saving face because of the money involved, right? I mean, really, that's what comes down to it, is like you have to then shift the way you speak because there's billions of dollars involved in this. And I thought David Haw had a really good line about it, and you said how just it didn't feel authentic, and David wrote that it sounded more like a corporation hosting a management seminar than a professional sports team firing its coach over issues with trust and communication. And everyone, quote, pulling in the same direction. What about basketball reasons, right? And so that, it was just kind of like, what do we need to hear? What do we need to hear from George McCaskey? What do we need to hear from Jerry Reinsdorf as fans, as the media? What is going to be enough to say, okay, we're good with that, and then to move on to the next coach? Kind of put it to rest. This is RIP, your era, Tom Thibodeau. It's over and done.
It was almost like, if you guys are going to sit up here and do this, you could have just let Jerry Reinsdorf's statement stand.
Mm-hmm. Like, there was no need
call,
for a press.
And
yeah.
Call us when you hire your next coach.
Yeah, there was no need for
because
a press.
Because his statement was more introspective than anything that you're how and then you start the press conference. Well, Gar always starts his press conference by saying we're not going to be specific or get into specifics. He's done that before. So we understand that's how he operates. But with something like this, everybody's looking for answers and you're not giving us any.
Well, this is the other thing I found that was funny during that press conference is this quote unquote culture of communication. When has that ever existed in the Bulls organization? Like, that's been a problem from Michael Jordan and Phil Jackson. You know, there's always been communication disconnects within this organization. The only thing was, you had Phil Jackson, you had Michael Jordan, you had Scottie Pippen. They were all talented enough to overcome that. You know what I'm saying? They can go in there and tune that out because those guys legitimately wanted to win. There's always been problems in the front office.
And it's shocking because I can tell you one thing that wasn't a problem with Ozzie Guillen. That's communication.
Mm-hmm.
Ozzie might have said too much.
Yeah.
But that's a problem too, is because he got to be a big screamer and then you start tuning him out after that.
Now, I talked to somebody that's actually in corporate management and they said one of the things that they noticed was that Tibbs had a problem. He said any good manager has to manage up just as well as he manages down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good point.
If that became a problem, then that deals with the communication problem, but also how does that work when being a buffer? Because a head coach, whether it's college, the pros, is a buffer between whether it's the president of the school or the faculty.
Your middle management.
The middle management.
Right.
So they have to be able to be that buffer in a sense. Did the players lose trust in Tibbs in any way, shape, or form in connection with upper management?
No, I think they just really started to tune him out. You know, it was a situation where, I mean, the guys won 64% of his games.
47% of those games were without
Derrick Rose.
Yeah.
But, excuse me, in light of the success that they've had over the years, his style, and I told you this, his style can be a little grating. You know, he's very demanding. He's very demanding of himself. He's very demanding of his players. But he doesn't know how to pull back. You know, he doesn't know how to, like, say, all right, you know what, let me chill for a day. Like, the whole thing about...
You guys have been working really hard. Let's do this for fun. Like, right. Yeah, he doesn't have that
off.
He
doesn't have it. Like, the whole thing about...
He went to the movies and they're like,
what are you doing? Him being pissed because Pax basically suggested that they call off a practice and have a team meeting or whatever like that. He didn't want to do that. Tibbs is, like, Tibbs is hard-nosed, man. Like, I'm pro-Tibbs. Because the guy wins. He's very good at what he does. Now, I don't agree with all of his methods, and I certainly, clearly he has flaws. But I think, you know, I think with him, Tibbs always had a chip on his shoulder because he's been an assistant for a very long time. He's been passed over for a lot of jobs. So this is his opportunity to come in and shine and like, you know what, I'm going to do it my way. And even the success that he had wasn't enough for him to be able to get comfortable and like, you know what, let me give these guys a break. Let me fall back a little bit. It was just drive, 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 because that's all he knew. So I think this situation right here taught him a lot. And I think, you know, he'll go into his next job understanding like he can't be like
he's got to baby step it into the new school.
Taskmaster, like you can't do that. Now that the modern thing, I just think that's a load of crap, man. Like, I feel like a lot of these guys, you ask every one of those guys in that locker room if they've had a coach like Tibbs, every one of them would tell you yes. And that coach that they've had like Tibbs is the reason why they're in that locker room.
Yeah.
So I'm not trying to hear nothing about, oh, these new players are soft and you got to be, no.
Basketball is basketball.
It's basketball.
Yeah.
That's just what it is.
If your philosophy is only to drive you into the ground kind of thing and you have to do everything that I say, I think... It for me as a player, it would tune me out. Like, for example, and I'm kind of writing about this right now, about different ways to motivate people, because I transferred high schools my senior year. One of the main reasons I did was because my old coach was not a winner, but he was like Thibs. He was like, just, you know, he literally got right here, told me that I effing sucked, and to go run for the next hour. And like, what good is that? It makes me tough, sure. Am I in shape? Sure. Does it make me a better basketball player? No, it doesn't. But then my next coach was way too lenient on us. And we would never run. All we would do, we would eat ice cream sandwiches, shoot threes, and scrimmage. I'm like, this ain't going to get us anywhere.
Right.
So I guess what I'm saying is, and I'm around a lot of college kids now, and it's not that they're soft. I think they're just fragile. I think they've grown up in a really weird time, right? 9/11 happened when they were 4 years old. The economy crashed in 2008. There's no jobs. It's weird. So they don't know. They need discipline, 100%. They're searching for it. They want it. But they also need freedom because they have a more confidence in their voice than we all had growing up. Would you ever talk back to a coach growing up?
No, I never did. You know what?
And but I probably would now if I grew up.
Yeah, I mean, and I had a coach just like you. But I think the issue with like a lot of today's players is like there's a sense of entitlement involved, you know, that
with coaches?
No, with players.
Oh, with players.
With players. I mean, you know, I've been saying this for years, like this is a generation where you get a trophy just for participation. You don't even have to do anything. You know what I'm saying? Like you make the team and you're on the squad, you know, win or lose, you're gonna get something. And you feel like Dwight Howard, perfect example. The other night he said,
I'm still a champion.
Of what?
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like what have you won? You're a champion of what? Like I don't understand.
It sounded crazy coming out of his mouth, and then when I heard it again. Because, you know, I'm lenient. I've always been lenient with Dwight Howard. Yeah. And I've always said, you know, I'm going to give him a chance. Because he was so young. You know, we have these kids coming into the NBA. We expect them to be men, to act like men, but they're 18.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's unreasonable expectation. So give them a chance to grow. Give them 4 or 5 years. I think that's something people should have given Derek a chance to do. Give him 4 or 5 years to actually grow into being a man and finding himself. And I think with everything we're hearing, everything we're seeing, that comment, I think we're seeing immature basketball players along with immature people being put in positions to make responsible decisions and responsible statements. And when we as fans and the media don't get that, then we just jump on them without saying, okay,
but that only
let me look at this.
That only
and
comes
no one
out,
has held Dwight accountable.
That only comes out when things get tough, though. You know, then you get to see, like, you get to see the true character of a person.
Yeah.
You know, you got Dwight Howard who made it all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals and got crushed.
Made it to the NBA Finals, lost to Kobe.
But then he's saying, I'm still a champion. Like, dude, you haven't won anything. So, like, what does that mean? Like, why would
you say
something?
It means to me that he's only willing to go so far and to give so much. Like, he's a champion of the hype game. He looks like a basketball god. His body is ridiculous, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you could put him in a Superman uniform, and I'd go watch him at the movies.
Yeah.
Like, I would think he was Clark Kent.
Yeah.
But it goes beyond that. We had this guy in my college at Coastal, and he couldn't even jump rope, but he had the body of Lamar Odom. I was like, oh my God, who is that? He's going to be amazing. And he sucked, but he sure looked like he could play.
Yeah.
And Dwight can play, but he doesn't have the heart. He doesn't have a killer instinct.
Which, when you look at what he looked at when he walked in the Lakers locker room, and Kobe's looking him in his eyes, he probably just knelt.
got so
his
scared,
heart
he's
just,
like, oh,
just
wait.
Disappeared.
He knew he made the wrong decision. He knew he made
and
the wrong
Kobe
decision.
And Kobe was looking dead through him and recognized who he was on the inside and said, dude, I'm not even rocking.
Right.
Because he wouldn't have Kobe's back.
Yeah.
You knew that.
But
you
I don't know even what, want though? You here.
Circling back to the Bulls, I think the situation really and truly, like, uncovered a lot of the character of the players in that locker room. You know, I always thought, you know, after covering for 5, 6 years, however long it's been, this is the only time I've seen or at least felt where it wasn't together. You know what I'm saying? Like, those guys weren't, like, it seemed like everybody kind of had their own little thing going on instead of everybody being locked in as a unit, you know, because obviously, you know, you got the 60-win season, Derek wins the MVP, everybody's gunning for LeBron. You come back, you know, he tears his ACL. They don't want to go out like suckers. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
They want to play hard. They come back the next year. They pick up Nate or whatever, and he wins the series. They're still playing with pride. This year, I didn't see that at all, man. Like, and you know, you just look top to bottom. It was like, okay, you got something going on over there that you want to get done, and you got something going on over here that you working on. You got something going on over there. It was like nobody was on the same page.
There was so many personal agendas.
Yeah.
Set up even before the season that leads you to think this season was doomed before it began.
From the start.
I mean, and I'm not saying this. I haven't talked to anybody, but just from the outside looking in, you have another offseason where they're chasing Carmelo. Everybody thinks that's the big guy they want. Taj has to believe he's the starting power forward.
Yeah.
In his heart and in his mind, this is my opportunity. This is my shot. They don't get Melo. They bring in Powell.
He got recruited over twice.
You have that. You have Joe with his knee being pushed not only to change positions and now have to go out to the three-point line to chase the stretch four because of Powell coming in. But then he's being pushed after he had surgery. It's almost like, man, you guys don't care about my health after I just gave myself and my body for this last playoff run.
Yeah.
Then you have Derek, what he's always going through. And Jimmy had to be out for self.
Oh, no question.
Yeah, Jimmy put his headphones on and he was like, I'm just going to be over here playing.
Yeah,
don't
exactly.
mind me.
No
yeah.
Question.
And then and you had Tip. So,
Jimmy
yeah,
had bigger
that was
things
definitely,
on his mind this year.
Definitely a lot of personal.
Ching ching.
I love Jimmy Butler to death. But that guy was out for Jimmy Butler this year. There's no question in
it
my mind.
It became more evident as the playoffs went on.
It
but you can't blame
obvious.
Him at that point.
No, I mean, you can't. But, I mean, like, you know, from – and he tried his best to downplay. He really and truly did. But I even saw a change in Jimmy this year. You know, Jimmy was one of the most affable guys in the locker room. You know what I'm saying? Like, he could – you know, you could pull him to the side and talk to him or whatever – about anything. You know, I've walked down the hall with that guy at the United Center. We had conversations about any and just everything, you know, just talking. And, you know, this year, Jimmy will disappear, you know what I'm saying, after games. He ducks out. He's not talking. And if he does talk, it's really short. And it's like, dude, like, you changed a little bit. Like, I still love you, but, like, I see, like, what's going on here. So that whole thing about beef between Jimmy Butler and Derrick Rose that came out and everything, I mean, I didn't see that, but – if that was the case, I'm almost positive it wasn't coming from Derek. You know what I'm saying? So it was a lot going on in the locker room.
One thing I picked up, I think it was game 5, and I mentioned this to you. I thought it was strange. Jimmy gets a rebound. Derek streaks down the left side of the court, and he's looking for the ball and clapping for the ball, and Jimmy looks at him, shakes his head, and slow walks it up the court.
Ooh.
And I said to myself, whoa.
That's telling.
And these guys sit right next to each other.
Yeah.
In the locker room.
And I'm like, okay, Jimmy. Like, I know everything we've heard through the media is we need to play with pace. We need to pick up the pace. Here's your guy that's supposed to get the ball to start the offense streaking down the court, and you throw the hand up to him and slow walk it.
You know what? It almost makes you wonder what Jimmy's being told inside that organization. There's a lot going on here, man. Like, this ain't just
layers to this.
This conspiracy theory is deep. I like it.